This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. We're going to start out talking with Jim Comperoni, talk about spring football. But first, a few little tidbits I have of information of things coming up. John Smoltz, number 29, will be retired in June from the Atlanta Braves. And Evan Smotrich from Michigan is transferring to Maryland. And Dwayne Cinches, the 7'2" center who used to play at Florida, has passed away at age 43 of respiratory failure. And so now let's move on and talk a little football with our good friend Jim Comperoni. Jim, how you doing, buddy?
Earl, a very good afternoon to you, my friend.
Hey, a very good afternoon to you, buddy. But, boy, I tell you, a lot of things going on today in the sports world. Sort of surprisingly shocking to hear about Dwayne Cinches. He was 7'2" and passed away at the age of 43. Such a young man, but, as you know, played in Florida from 87 to 90, the first Florida All-American, and led them to their first trips to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that's sad news. That's the first I'd heard about that when you mentioned that a couple minutes ago. He certainly was part of, I think, when Lon Kruger was there starting to get that program turned around a little bit. And he was an impact player. I don't think he ever did much in the NBA, did he?
No, he didn't. He just averaged 3-4 points a game in his first year. That was his highest scoring average.
Well, 43 years old. Life is short, my man.
Yes, it is. And then we heard a surprise here. Matrix is going to Maryland.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
I don't have any real immediate opinions on that. I think the kid's an excellent shooter, and he's got to work on some other things. But I'm still not clear on why he left Michigan.
Yes, I mean he probably likes shooting, but I think he feels he's got to learn the other parts of the game more so to be a complete player. I don't think he felt in his mind he probably wouldn't have been a complete player in playing in John Beilein's system.
Well, he was streaky last year. He was excellent in November and December as a three-point shooter, then had a bad cold streak after that. And how you react to adversity a lot of times shapes the direction that you're headed, and whatever happened in terms of adversity, he must have thought it was time to go. And the timing, it was right after the season.
Yeah.
Kind of surprised a lot of people. But, when he went there, I thought he was really good for that system as being a stretch four, a guy that could really stretch a defense. He was not as tall as Pitsnoggle was at West Virginia, but I could certainly see how they could have used him in that offense, and they did when he was shooting well, but apparently there were other things going on and made him want to leave Michigan.
Yep, that's for sure. Well, let's talk about the Michigan State's interest in spring football. As you know, usually at this time of year, defense is ahead of the offense, but is there anything else you see some areas in the Spartan defense where it needs to even improve even more so?
Well, I continue to look at that three technique position, you know, where Jarrell Worthy played. You know, they're getting Tyler Hoover oiled up in there. He's moving inside. And last week they also, you know, Anthony Rashad White is a guy they're really high on, and he played really well against Georgia in the bowl game. He's primarily a nose, but last week they used him at the three just to create some versatility so that everyone in the defensive interior can play both positions. So, on one hand, it's interesting to see Anthony Rashad White in there doing that. On the other hand, Hoover played inside at the one a little bit more. That's an area where they need work, and they need to get a lot done this spring if the defense is going to go from very good to great. I think the defense was very good last year, top five in the country. Can they become a great defense? Not unless those two defensive tackle positions are really, really strong. Last year they were really strong, and with Pickleman and Worthy, but inside there they need Anthony Rashad White to keep doing what he's doing, and they need to develop some of that talent. They do have some people in there. You know, Hoover's interesting. Makajah Reynolds is interesting. Brandon Clements, a freshman, he's interesting. Joel, the Knox kid from Muskegon, they're really interested in him. And James Kittredge, the transfer from Vanderbilt. They've got some people in there, but none of them are proven, so it'll be on player development.
Yes. Do you think, is there a possibility they could go to a 3-4 instead of the 4-3 they've been using?
I don't think so. I think they've got, if anything, they've got more talent on the D-line than they do in linebacker in terms of numbers. So I think trying to play more linebackers doesn't make sense, except for one caveat. If Lawrence Thomas comes back from his injury and is just outstanding in August, maybe there are situations in which you might want to put him in non-passing down situations as a, maybe a stand-up defensive end in kind of a 3-4. You know, Mike Tressel mentioned that to me on signing day a couple of months ago, but then Lawrence Thomas was lost for the spring to an injury. So I don't think they still know what they have in Lawrence Thomas. So that would be the only way, is that if you have, you know, Max Bulla, Danicos Allen, Chris Norman, and Lawrence Thomas proves to be an excellent player also, you'll try to find ways to get him on the field. Now, you know, in past years in the nickel defense, they put Steve Gardner out there, and it was as one of the linebackers, and they'd take a D lineman out. Usually Jarrell Worthy would come out, and they'd go with a, you know, a 30 defense. So their nickel defense has been, you know, kind of a 3-4 situation for a long time. But in terms of being a 3-4 on first and 10 in conventional situations, I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, and what about the backfield? I mean, we know Harlan Barnett's done a very good job with the defensive backs, but how do you see that shaping up, you know, especially when they have to go to a nickel situation?
Yeah, I was asking Barnett about it a couple days ago, and in nickel right now they're still using Isaiah Lewis as the nickel back. You know, of course, he's a starter back there at strong safety, but in the nickel defense as a true freshman 2 years ago, he that's how he got on the field, was playing in the star position, which is the slot area, which is the corner that is in the slot area, not one of the two deep safeties, but, you know, a little closer to the box in the short area. And then last year as a starter, when they went nickel defense, he remained a the slot area guy. The nickel man who came in, the first DB off the bench last year, was Curtis Drummond most of the year. The year before that, it was Jairus Jones. Whether it be Jones or Drummond, when they came off the bench, they would go to the deep part of the field with Trenton Robinson, and Lewis would move up to the slot area like he had the year before as a true freshman. Now Isaiah Lewis is a junior, and although he's a second-year starter and an emerging leader, when they go nickel, they keep doing what they're doing, and it's probably pretty smart. They keep him at the slot area. He's one of their smaller safeties in terms of height, and maybe a little more agile. So if it's not broke, don't fix it. So he goes up to the slot area on third down. That's what they're working on right now. Now, at free safety, the position that Trenton Robinson used to play, everybody knows that sophomore Curtis Drummond and redshirt freshman R.J. Williamson, those two guys are competing for that spot. So they're rotating back and forth with the ones, but when they go nickel, they're both on the field. Whoever the number two guy is, they both go on there, and your two deep safeties are Drummond and Williams, and Isaiah goes to the slot like he has for the last 3 years. So that's what the nickel's looking like right now.
Yeah, I know we haven't talked much about special teams. Have you had a chance to talk to any coaches about how the special teams may be working out this fall?
Not really. Haven't looked into that much. You know, they're proving it, punter and kicker and long snapper. So I did see out of the corner of my eye last week that Joel Heath, redshirt freshman defensive end, who's getting some good compliments from Mark D'Antonio. He's backing up Will Golston. And, you know, D'Antonio keeps saying he's kind of a carbon copy of Will Golston. Now he's roughly the same height and the same weight, but I wouldn't go that far. I mean, Golston, he's kind of a freak. And Joel Heath is still a younger guy coming along. But the point is, Heath is starting to look pretty good, starting to mature physically, even though he's just a redshirt freshman. He'll be a second-string defensive end. And right now, you know, he's on schedule to someday be a starter, maybe a 2-year starter, maybe even a 3-year starter. My point is, the other day I did see out of the corner of the eye Joel Heath block a field goal. So I don't know if that's happening all the time, but he made a play on special teams. As far as special teams, you know, they work on point after and field goal protection and all that stuff every day. But, you know, they're not in the spring, they're not going to work much at all on kickoff coverage or even kickoff return against live tackling, because that's, you can get a lot of injuries in that area of the game. You work on lane assignment and the visuals and the running down and maybe do some thud stuff, but I've not really heard much about changes in terms of coverage units.
Well, let's talk about the unit that everyone wants to hear about, the offense. And how did you like the offense, and how do you think, at least hearing about Andrew Maxwell thus far?
Yeah, I don't know much about the two interceptions he threw in the scrimmage on Saturday. I give Michigan State credit for sending out the actual stats.
Yeah.
That'll get people, you know, buzzing about, well, why did he throw two interceptions? Then you and I could talk about that. But point is, we didn't see it.
Right.
We were, you know, media were not allowed to go. It was closed to the public. You know, we'll ask some questions on Tuesday, try to get the bottom of it and find out what we can gather from that. And really, we won't be able to gather much till we see him in the green-white game in 2 weeks. You know, if he throws another couple of interceptions next week and then struggles in the green-white game, then we'll have something to talk about all summer. I'm not sure, you know, who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe someone dropped a pass or maybe it was deflected at the line of scrimmage. You never know what an interception is. So Maxwell, I have to say, I was kind of expecting him to come out of that with maybe a little more clean statistically. Maybe it wasn't his fault. Maybe you throw an in when he's supposed to run an in and the guy runs it out. You know, a lot of times two interceptions are not the fault of the quarterback, but we don't know for sure. You know, I'd go back to the defense. The thing that caught my eye a little bit was that Tyquan Hammack had 9 tackles. And, you know, stats sometimes in scrimmages can be a little misleading. You know, yeah, did a running back get his yards against the number 3 defense, or did the guy make a 50-yard catch against the third-string walk-on? But when a guy's out there making 9 tackles and he's a second-string middle linebacker, I think that speaks well to you know, the player's focus and tenacity. And Tyquan Hammack, frankly, is a guy that was real good last spring and was almost neck and neck with Max Bulla heading into August. Then Max Bulla hit a different gear, won that job for good, and had an excellent sophomore season last year. Hammack played second-string middle linebacker, was okay, and then for whatever reason, he was not taken with the team to the bowl game, if you remember. He stayed home. We never found out what that was about. We don't know what it was, but, you know, they kind of ran a tight ship on him, and he didn't play. And he showed up this spring at about 229 pounds, still in good shape for a guy that used to battle the weight scales a little bit early in his career. But Tyquan Hammack is, you know, showed back up to play some middle linebacker. I kind of thought there was a chance that you might see Tyquan Hammack move back to fullback. Remember, he played fullback 2 years ago. He was kind of a jumbo guy at about 245, had moved from linebacker to fullback. He wasn't crazy about it, but he played pretty well at it and got the ball once or twice against Minnesota. And, you know, although Todd Anderson became the starting fullback last year and did an excellent job, I kind of thought Hammack might be the guy in line to take over for Todd Anderson. So, you know, especially with Max Bulla really taking over that middle linebacker job, so I kind of thought Hammack might end up at fullback. I think the fact that they kept him on defense speaks to the fact that, you know, they don't want to they want to keep him there behind Max Bulla, you know, just in case something happened to Max, if he, you know, turns an ankle or tweaks a hamstring or something. They don't want to have a huge drop-off. And as good as Max Bulla is, especially in getting everyone lined up, and they really feel they can be multiple with him because communication is so quick, you know, they think they can win with Ty Hammack, too. And I don't think they want to take that safety net away. So Ty Hammack, you know, being a good coverage guy on special teams, a good second-string middle linebacker, I think they think that it's better for the team to keep him there as a second-string middle linebacker, even though he might not get on the field a ton, rather than maybe starting him at fullback. I mean, Palazzetti's coming along well at fullback, but I was kind of wrong about Hammack. I thought he might go back to offense, but he stayed a middle linebacker. Not only has he stayed, he's in good shape, and it sounds like he had a good scrimmage, Earl.
Okay. Well, Jim, it's good talking with you, and we'll talk again some more about spring. We'll probably talk a little bit after the spring game coming up in a couple of weeks, and then we'll be able to talk more fully about the whole Michigan State team going into the fall.
Sounds great, Earl. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Yep. Bye-bye. And that's Jim Comperoni talking football, a little bit of spring football right here on AM 870 WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
I'm Jennifer Ludden, and here's what we're working on in the week ahead on Talk of the Nation. Taste testing the Mars menu and 8-year-old pork chops. Political junkie Ken Rudin returns on Wednesday, plus the 10 most harmful novels. All that and much more. Join Neil Conan in the coming week on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that was Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for joining us. A wind advisory remains in effect until 10 o'clock tonight. Mostly cloudy and windy today with scattered rain showers, a high of 65. We could see gusts up to 50 miles per hour. Then partly cloudy tonight with a chance of light rain and some patchy frost overnight, low 30s for the low, and then mostly sunny on Tuesday with highs in the mid-50s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open. 855-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Right now, let's talk with our good friend from the Lansing State Journal. Joe Rexroad is with us. We'll talk a little bit more spring football. And Joe, how you doing, my man?
I'm good, Earl. It's, week four, right? So week four out of five. So yep. We are past the halfway point of this long spring season.
Yes, we are. Hey, did you hear about Smotrich? He's going transferring to Maryland.
Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what they have coming back, but, you know, good for him that he found a spot. And I still think he can be a decent player. I mean, 6'8", you know, with some skill, some shooting ability. I still thought he could have been good for Michigan, but, hopefully he'll do well at Maryland. I'm sure they can use him.
Yes, and then unfortunately, Dwayne Schenck just passed away. He was only 43 years old. He played at Florida from 87 to 90, and he was the first Florida player who led them to their first NC2A tournament in 89, and 90. He took them there first. He was the first big man to do it, to 7'2". He died of respiratory failure at the age of 43.
Yeah, it's a really sad story. He battled cancer for a long time, and yeah. I remember him well. I mean, he had probably one of the best mullets in sports history back then in the late 80s. He was a beast of a center in there. But yeah, it's a sad story for him, and I know he dealt with that for quite a while. He really battled it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about our spring game. The first scrimmage this week, and the offense. How'd you see about? I mean, I know we didn't get the chance to watch the scrimmage, but Andrew Maxwell threw two interceptions, and the offense. It looked, at least the report we got said, seemed like they were okay. Didn't seem like they were great or outstanding. But how do you view that offensive output?
Yeah, it's really tough, and I heard Kopp, and I agree with him. It's like, the two picks. There's so many different things could have happened: a bad route, a deflection. Although, hey, he's playing against, some pretty good cornerbacks, particularly Johnny Adams, who had two picks, one for a touchdown. So it's just hard. I mean, I think Kirk Cousins, I swear he had at least one pick in every one of these things, And
yeah.
Hey, I remember, a couple of years ago, it was Nickel and Cousins. And so, we would wait with bated breath to find out the stats of the scrimmages. And, and if I remember correctly, I think really Nickel had better – numbers and those things, but obviously that didn't mean much. I mean, Cousins ended up winning the job, so it's tough. But I would say overall, I would expect this defense to dominate this offense. And certainly probably hurts the offense that Tony Lippitt's out now with an ankle injury, because he was, a clear number one receiver. But, even though the offensive line comes back, so much of the defense is back, and there's just so much learning still going on at the receiver position and at the tight end position, which is important in the run game and the pass game. So I think it's about what you would expect in terms of the defense winning. I think it's interesting that Joel Heath had a couple sacks. You keep hearing his name. By the time you get to this point in the spring, you start to hear some of the same names over and over again. Joel Heath is one of them. Darian Harris is another one of them, although he didn't show up on the stat sheet for this game, but another guy they've talked about a lot. And then Jeremy Langford is a guy we've been hearing about. He obviously has that speed. They want to use it in some way. So they move him to receiver on Thursday, which I believe is right after Lippitt gets hurt. And he has three catches on Saturday. So, and like Tom said, you don't know who was going against what defense, one versus one, one versus two, three versus three. But Langford's a guy, it's obvious that they want to get him involved in some way. And, of course, he's from Keyshawn Martin's high school, might be the next burner from Westland John Glenn of Michigan State.
And he talked about a little bit about, that with Hoover moving in there. Do you think we might see some more 3-4 than the standard 4-3 they've been going with?
I asked Narduzzi that at the beginning of spring just to throw it out there, and he kind of made fun of me, so.
Not much chance.
yeah, just like that. But I don't think so too much because Mark D'Antonio addressed that at the beginning of spring too, so this team is still built more for the 4-3, even though They have a lot of good linebackers. But they tinkered a little bit with that seriously a couple of years ago when they were really heavy at linebacker and, you know, maybe a little light up front. But I think they're just more comfortable running that 4-3. Like, again, I heard Comp running, you know, of course they do run the three down lineman on the nickel situation, third down. They've been doing that since D'Antonio arrived back in 07. I think it was they had Irvin Baldwin at the nose back then. He'd slide from the end to the nose, and they had, you know, Sane Deke on one end, and I forget who the other end was, but they've been doing that consistently. But I don't think we'll see too much first or second down, 3-4 at this point. I think they looked at it, and they kind of said, you know what, that's really not who we are. So I'd be surprised if you see too much of it.
Okay, we got Todd on the line. Todd, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Merrill. Good afternoon, Joe.
Hey, Todd.
I've got a couple quick questions for you. First of all, word on the street is that Le'Veon Bell has gotten even bigger. Big kid. I certainly like the way he runs the ball. It was tremendous towards the end of the Super Bowl. Really, all season, should probably get the majority of the carries. But is he noticeable bigger? I mean, you know, according to what you're hearing leaking out, they're talking 10 to 15 pounds on a guy that was already pretty good size for a running back. And then finally, this is something that, you know, a lot of football fans don't care about. But when do you expect the captains to be announced? And if you had to guess, I mean, I know they normally go with three or four. But if you were to put your expertise, whatever that is, and I feel that you have a fair amount, who do you think we'll see as captain? You know, again, some people don't care. Some people don't think it's important. But I think successful college football teams are normally successful because they have talent, good coaching. And the part of that equation that often gets lost is either senior or junior leadership. And I would think that there are three or four kids that are probably maybe obvious. But if you had to guess, when will they be announced and who do you think they'll be?
Yeah, good questions. Well, first of all, on Bell, I heard a little bit of that too, but when I asked the other week and he said that he's basically right around the same as last year. Mm-hmm. I think he said he was 237. So, and looking at him, he looks about the same to me. I mean, he's big. You know, he's a big guy, but yeah. he doesn't look way bigger or anything. As far as captains, you know, my guess, two guys I will throw out that I feel pretty confident will be named captains would be Andrew Maxwell and Max Bulla. Mm-hmm. I think those two guys as juniors, which would allow them to be two-year captains, I think that's a safe bet. After that, I think it gets interesting. You know, Larry Kuemper is definitely a guy who has been marked from day one as a, you know, potential captain on this team. You know, it's tough, though, as a guy who, you know, basically it looks like he's going to be a backup. You know, he may be the number two back and he may get a lot more carries. You can still be a captain and not be a, you know, a star or a key player, but I don't know what, you know, what effect, you know, that will have on him. I think he's a possibility. I think Chris McDonald is a good possibility on the offensive line. There are a couple others that have been mentioned that are eluding me right now. You know, hey, even Johnny Adams, I think, you know, the coaches have been really happy with his maturity this spring and how serious he's been. He's certainly a great player. I mean, I think he's a guy who can be a high draft pick if he – just keeps adding weight and play, has a great senior season. I mean, you never know. Maybe a guy like that could sneak in there. So, but I think Maxwell and Max Bulla are the two near sure things at this point.
Yes, and it seems like they will probably be the top two. And, you know, they do that after – usually it's after the players have reported and everything, and they do that voting usually the first week of the season. That's when they usually do it, right around then, isn't it, Joe?
Yeah, it's right around the end of camp, so you know, a lot to be determined still there. If I think back, we're talking about Nickel and Cousins a few years ago. I believe Cousins was named captain right before we found out he was going to start in that opener back in 2009. So yeah, that was right up near the end of camp.
Yep. Well, when we look at the defensive backs, you know, we know Johnny's really, really good. How do you see the other side, and how do you see the strength? I know they're still going. They're pretty much set on who they're going to be playing at the safeties. But how do you look at the whole defensive backfield?
Well, I think it's tough because the North hurt his shoulder. He's out for the rest of the spring. But you know, at the same time, maybe that gives more reps to those backups. They need to keep working on that depth, and even though they bring back, I think, the two best corners in the Big Ten, Adams and Denard, they are very young behind them. So a chance to get more reps. I know Mitchell White is still around, so he's a guy who has been around as a backup. Then you got Trey Waynes, who they may even look at him at safety as well, but they like him a lot. And then Arjun Colquhoun is another guy with a lot of speed. So, you know, I guess it's a chance for the rest of the spring to look at those young guys a little more than reps with the ones. I think, you know, next year, as long as Denard heals as expected, I think, you know, that's the best cornerback out of the Big Ten. I would have to think it would be up there nationally.
Yes, and then when you look at the depth at wide receiver, are there going to be a lot of guys trying to win that some wide receiver jobs? Do you still think most of the wide receivers' jobs are open, or have they started to close up yet?
Well, again, I think Lippitt was a pretty safe bet to start or at least be a really key player next season, and I still think that's a great chance. It hurts him to lose these reps because all those guys need reps, even though Lippitt. You know, because Lippitt's just, he's split the reps so much, he's done so much on defense and offense. He really needed this spring to just totally focus in on offense and establish himself. So it's interesting because I think Lippitt and Benny Fowler would be my top two guys as, you know, starters, really, if they're healthy. I mean, it's tough to say that with Fowler because that foot has been so problematic. Both feet have been, but I still think if he's all the way there, I think he's a tremendous talent. And he's been around, and he's been in the offense. So, you know, those guys hurt. He has opportunities for other. And Keith Humphrey is a guy who they like. Andre Sims Jr., you keep hearing his name. He scored the only touchdown in the scrimmage, 18-yard pass from Maxwell. So running with the ones there, getting a touchdown pass. And, of course, DeAnthony Arnett still waiting. I think we'll hear this week. I'd be surprised if this week goes past and we don't know about Arnett's status. But there's another guy, obviously. And, you know, then some of the freshmen coming, I think, are really going to have a chance to get in there and compete. So I don't think anything's locked down. I think, again, the two guys I would have said would be starters in a two-receiver set are both hurt right now. So it's even less certain in a way.
I know that was one area we talked about in the beginning, how about the depth of the team, and it looked like the depth was going to be pretty good. And I guess it still is, but, boy, they're running into a lot of injuries in this spring, aren't they?
They are, and, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, every spring you'll see guys and the yellow shirts pile up. But you know, I'm sure if we were in the fall, some of them would be playing still, but it's just not worth it to push it in the spring. So it'll be interesting to see who they have available for the spring game because, you know, you hope that there are enough guys for an entertaining product for the fans. Last year, they were really thin both on the line and in the backfield, defensive backfields. This year, it looks like they're still in good shape to be able to field two pretty solid teams. But if they have a few more injuries at certain spots, that starts looking a little thinner.
Yes, I know we got to look at it. We always, that one thing we always do in sports is look at the backups. And, of course, I think we've got to keep a close eye on Connor Cook to see he was 9 for 14 in this last scrimmage, 76 yards and one interception, about the same sort of stats that Maxwell had. But I know we got to keep an eye on him just to see how he's developing as well, even though he's just a straight-up freshman.
Right. And to assume that his stats were done against backups mostly, and Maxwell's were against the first defense. Don't know that for sure. You don't know how they mixed up reps or anything like that, but that's what you would assume. And that's part of what we should get cleared up a little bit by Mark D'Antonio tomorrow. But Connor Cook, very important spring for him. I mean, they need a reliable backup, and it's critical that they get him as far up to speed as he can. As he said at the beginning of spring, you know, he finally can focus on Michigan State's offense. Last year, his job was to, you know, be the quarterback for the scout team and look each week at the opposing team's offense and, you know, turn himself into that team's quarterback. And so, you know, now he can finally focus on this offense. Down the road, you know, Tyler O'Connor's coming in the fall, and down the road, it's probably going to be Tyler O'Connor versus Connor Cook to replace Kendrick Maxwell. But right now, the idea would be, of course, to redshirt O'Connor next year and to have Cook be ready as a number two, and it's a really important position because, obviously, injuries can happen at that spot.
Yes, and he's done a pretty good job of lining up his reserves and everything and having a good depth on this team, and it seems like it's getting better, you know, but, you know, as we know, injuries can happen at any time, and you know, hopefully no one else gets injured. But right now, things are stacking up pretty good at Michigan State, don't you think?
Well, I mean, they've got, again, I think next year's team, and I said it last year, but I'll say it again, and you know, mean it again this time. I think it's going to be the most talented team I've seen at Michigan State next year, even more talented than last year's. They lost some really good seniors, but now with some of the young guys developing, I really think they have more players at more positions than I've ever seen. You know, I wasn't really around the height of the Perlis era. I've heard, you know, some people, Jack Ebling is, we've discussed this, and he thinks this is better than it was then. He goes back to the late 60s, the height of the Duffy era. So, no, I don't think anyone's saying this team is like those teams, which right. were dominant teams, but just the best since then, perhaps, in terms of material. So, I mean, look, this team is going to have a chance. You still have some big question marks with the passing game, but I think Andrew Maxwell really is as prepared as you can be for a guy who, you know, a fourth-year junior has been able to sit behind a really good quarterback. Get the receivers going, and I think this team could be really tough to deal with. And I think the schedule next year is not quite as daunting as last year's schedule was.
Oh, that's certainly true. Hey, Joe, what did you think about the whole Derek Nix thing? I know that came out as well the other week, but what were your thoughts on that?
Well, I think I'm not surprised at all that he's coming back. I thought so from the beginning. And I thought so based on what Tom Izzo said at the press conference, which is, you know, he has demonstrated over the past year plus that he's serious. He's done everything to ask, and he was on shaky ground, as we've discussed. Had this happened a year ago, I think Derek Nix would have been playing somewhere else because he had already had some accountability issues, and Tom Izzo had questioned to his face, do you want to do this or not? He showed he did. I thought he matured a lot last year. I mean, look, he made a stupid mistake, and no one's excusing it. But I think he's paid a pretty hefty price with the public scrutiny. I mean, certainly I've written a lot of stories about it. People who cover Michigan State, it's been all over TV and radio. That's part of the deal with being a public figure, being an athlete, is you get celebrated, you get on the front page of the paper, and you get on ESPN, but when something goes wrong, it's just going to go the other way. So, I think he paid a hefty price. I thought he was sincere at a press conference. I mean, I felt for the kid. He's up there. He's got the shining lights in his face, and he's crying, and he's saying he's sorry. For frankly, something that, again, dumb mistake, but no one was harmed. I mean, there have been worse things that have gone on. So I think this may end up being a turning point for him in terms of, you know, really – sparking a great off season, and if he has a great off season, gets down to 260, I think he'd be a really good player as a senior. I just will be really, really surprised if he doesn't respond exactly as they hope he responds.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Joe. I think he's going to respond positively. I think he'll be having a very good senior year. He's really grown a lot, as we've seen, since he's been here as a freshman. Every year he's grown somewhat, and he really blossomed into a pretty good player last year. And I can see only that happening even more so, unless he has a setback. But other than that, I think he should have a great, great senior year.
Yeah, and if he does, that's one of the necessary ingredients for what could be a really, really good team next year. A lot of uncertainty again, and certainly some huge loss, especially Draymond Green. But I think that's one of Tom Izzo's best rosters potentially. When you look number 1 through 12, I mean, it's a lot of good players. It's going to be interesting how it all, you know, comes together.
That's for sure. Hey, Joe, I want to thank you for being with me. Always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll get together and talk a little bit more after spring football is over.
Sounds good. I'll see you over there tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, then. Yep. See you later, Joe. Yep. Bye-bye. And that's Joe Rexroth from the Lansing State Journal talking with us right here on AM 870. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
The documentary Bully is a brutal depiction of school bullying and its consequences. Many schools hoped to show it to students until it got an R rating. Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein led the campaign to press for a PG, and last week he succeeded. I'm Jennifer Ludden. Harvey Weinstein joins Neil Conan next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Windy and rainy marks the day today with a wind advisory in effect until 10 o'clock. Mostly cloudy with scattered rain showers, a high around 65, with gusts of wind up to 50 miles per hour possible. Then partly cloudy tonight with a chance of light rain showers and patchy frost overnight, a low in the lower 30s. Mostly sunny for Tuesday, highs in the mid-50s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, temperatures that rose into the upper 80s, the lower 80s, that is, slowed and may have convinced at least as many as 4,300 runners to sit out this year's Boston Marathon. 4,300 runners may have dropped off, and they had defending champion Jeffrey Mutai dropped out at the 30-kilometer after he won the race with the fastest marathon time in history. Mutai, who also won the marathon in the fall, was hoping to win and earn a place on the Kenyan history Kenyan Olympic team. So that's some of the results of the early going of the Boston Marathon. Time is 41 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. You're listening to Michigan State University Radio at WKAR East Lansing, where this is the last day of our fundraiser. We're getting awfully close to our goal of trying to get to $135,000. We're over $120,000 right now. We have 198 new members, and so we need more new members. We know there are a lot of you out there, especially who have not given to WKAR before. We'll ask you to call in, pledge your support. You can call in and pledge on the web if you like, or you can call in and give us a regular pledge at 353-5000, area code 517-353-5000, or you can call 432-9527 and pledge your support to AM 870 WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR East Lansing. And we ask that you call in and pledge your support. Become a member of the WKAR family. There are a lot of ways to do it. You can just call in and pledge to become a regular member for us. Or you can just call in later on. Or you can just call, you know, send your pledge in on the web and do that. And send a pledge in on AM 870 WKAR. A lot of ways to do it, and we try to make it the easiest possible for you to call in and pledge your support. A lot of ways to do it. A lot of you out there who have given a pledge to us from time to time in the past, and some of you call and pledge online. Some of you just call in your pledge on the phone lines. So either way you want to do it is fine with us, but just call in and become a part of the WKAR family right here on AM 870. 43 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. If you've never called us, you can become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Well, in case you hadn't heard about the score at the scrimmage, the score basically, and they have different scoring in the scrimmages. The defense won the scrimmage 72-32. They have a different kind of scoring system. That's what happened. The defense is always ahead of the offense at this time of year. And we'll see that. That'll change a lot in the fall when we get to fall camp and the offenses will learn what they're doing and what they have to do, and they'll learn how to, they'll be more in tune and working with each other, working together, and we'll see that in their execution in the fall. But right now, the scrimmage yesterday on Saturday was won 72-32 by the defense. They won those spring jerseys in that first big scrimmage from Michigan State. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870, WKAR East Lansing. In case you hadn't heard, Evans Mottridge is transferring to Maryland. And, of course, John Smoltz is going to have his jersey retired in June, the number 29. He's going to have that retired in June, so that's for sure. And Dwayne Cinches has passed away at the age 7'2" at 43 years young. A young man who had respiratory failure, he'd been battling cancer for a long time, so that's what we heard about him. And we'll bring you more information on anything going on in the world of sports right here on AM 870 WKAR as we'll talk to you about things here on AM 870 WKAR in East Lansing. And that's what I'm looking at some of the things going on, and you have some early NBA games today going on. You have Houston is playing. Toronto is playing Atlanta right now, and Boston is playing Charlotte. And let's see, we have Toronto playing Atlanta. Toronto's up over Atlanta, and we have Memphis playing New Orleans. Memphis is up 37-33. Over New Orleans right now. And we also, there's a change, a pitching change at Dodger Stadium. The Dodgers are up, are leading, they're 9-1 right now, as you know. I got to tell you, and you know, they celebrated Jackie Robinson Day yesterday. They wore his number 42 jersey on all the jerseys yesterday in Major League Baseball. That was one reason. That was the main reason why I became a Brooklyn Dodger fan when I was young, because of Jackie Robinson. He was such a great player. Of course, he was still alive and still playing when I was growing up, and I got a chance to see him play many times. He was definitely one of the best players ever to play the game of baseball. He was he stole bases whenever he wanted to. He was a great base runner, and you got a chance to see how good he was back in those times. But, you know, that's the reason why a lot of kids became Dodger fans, were because of Jackie Robinson. And, he was definitely the reason why I became a Dodger fan back then. Never did fall in love with the Tigers, like the Tigers, because they were a team that were close in the area. But when you talk about as a kid, when you talk about fans, well, I had to say mine was with Jackie Robinson. The time now is 48 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. You're listening to radio station WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. And we got to tell you, coming up, the WNBA draft will be coming up, and so, yeah, they've got some good players. I don't think there are any really name droppers at first. We know next year you'll have Brittany Griner. Everyone will be falling all over her to get that first overall pick in the WNBA draft next year. But he's not there this year. He's got one more year to go before entering the draft. That's one thing. The women don't have to worry about players leaving early. They stay all 3 or 4 years. You know, some will transfer, but for the most part, they stay all 3 or 4 years in college, get their degrees, and then move on to the pros or something else. But that's what happens in the WNBA. We'll have the Stanford will probably Nneka Agbunike is going to be the first overall pick. We'll see that. For sure. Not for sure, but it's a good chance he'll be the first overall pick. Or Shanice Johnson, who is looked at that might be the number two pick, and Glory Johnson is number three. But those are some of the possibilities. But that's going to be going on right now. It should be going on, the WNBA draft. And also, what other thing that's going on right now is you can donate to WKAR, become a member of the WKAR family. We come your way each and every day from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. And I know a lot of you may have been given money already to our programming, for our classical music programming, or to the news programming. Now is the time, since this is the last day, and you can call up right now and say, you're giving apart because of the sports programming. So you can do that right now for us and give us a call at 353-5000, area code 517-353-5000, area code 517. Give to WKAR and WKAR sports programming. A lot of you have given for the programs that are your favorite, that you like a lot. I hope that one of the programs you like a lot here on WKAR is the sports programming. Let us know how much you feel and how much you love our sports programming right here at AM 870. And give us a call. Talk sports with us or call up to mention how much you enjoy the sports programming right here on AM 870 WKAR. And now is the time to call. And we've got 10 minutes left in today's show. And that's 10 minutes that you've got a chance to call. But you can also call us when you're not here on the air or when you get home or whatever and you get time to give us a call. You can do that by giving us a call at 353-5000. Area code 517-353-5000. That's the number to call right here at WKAR to make your pitch and become a member of the WKAR family. It's easy to do. All you got to do is give that number a call, 353-5000, and let us know that you want to become a member of the WKAR family. And so do that for me right now. Give us a call. We've only got a few minutes left in the sports programming, and this is a time for you to call to give to the sports programming. Or if you want, if you're out there but you can't call while you're at work or doing something like that, then give us a call as soon as you can and let us know that, hey, you want to be involved in the WKAR portion of the WKAR sports programming and let people know that you're going to donate a pledge to WKAR and donate it because you like our sports programming and what we do in the area of sports right here on AM 870 WKAR. And Jacob is with us. And Jacob, we've got the WNBA draft coming up today, so we'll be hearing about that. And there's a slight chance one of the Michigan State players could be drafted, a slight chance, but more than likely they'll probably get picked as a free agent. But they're probably not. The girl from Ohio State, she might be drafted either in the first or second round. That guard, she's a pretty good guard at Ohio State, and she may get picked as well. But as you know, the draft is it's funny, the women's draft, of course, doesn't create the excitement that the men's draft have. But, it's a pretty good draft, and you can still get some pretty good players out of there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's not the buzz around it. But, yeah, it's always interesting to see, because like you said, these players do play for the most time all 4 years. You don't have the thing where they do come out. So you do see them develop a little bit more and mature more across those 4 years. So, it's always interesting. I think Sarah Perhalis might be is it the guard from Ohio State? I'm not sure if she graduated. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, she may be.
So, yeah, she was a very good guard at Ohio State, did a very good job there. So wouldn't be surprised to see her get picked up.
Yes, she might be drafted, if not in the lower half of the first round or the second round, but it's a good chance that she'll probably get drafted. The one thing about the draft, and it's been talked about for two or three years, and especially in the men's draft, of either making that 2 years or they got to stay for at least 2 years. Some people, there has been some talk of maybe making it go, if you commit to college, you got to go stay at 3 years and then make them go three. I don't know if that'll work at all, but you hear some of that talk about a 2 year mandatory, and some people would have them go, like one kid to avoid the whole thing, he went overseas and played overseas and then came back when he was eligible to play in the draft. So you could have that happen, but it's one of those things, is it's really hard to say if we'll have some other form. We know there's always going to be people trying to get around the draft, and that's the problem with the draft and young people. They're influenced by so many people, and there might be a lot of people out there talking to some of them, got their ear, and make them to avoid going to college, just doing the thing in basketball.
Yeah, it is. It's tough, because at the same time, it's hard to tell a kid who has dreamed his whole life of playing in the NBA that he can't play in the NBA just because he has to stay in college for a certain number of years, even if he's ready to play physically and mentally and all that. But I think it makes the college game better, without a doubt, to have these kids stay longer than just a year. You get these one and done kids, and it seems like the one and done kids are usually just the really, really good players now. But there are exceptions. You have guys like Darius Morris last year, who at Michigan, who was a good player, but he wasn't really great player, you know, and he ended up going. But you had kids like Jaron Sullinger, who stayed for, you know, his sophomore year. So it definitely makes the game better, but it's hard to justify telling the kids, you know, okay, you know, you can't go just because you have to stay for 2 years for some reason that we've made up.
Yes, and it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. Do they extend it to 2 years? Do they leave it as it is? I'm sort of curious to see which way that will go. I mean, right now it could go to 2 years, but there's probably enough out there, enough people out there that maybe can convince the commissioner to leave it at 1 year. So I guess we'll just have to look at that one and just to see how it goes. But that's another issue in sports. There's so many issues in sports, but that's one of those that we'll have to look at. And then, too, when so many young players end up being broke and losing their money, that makes you wonder, you know, is it better to go one and done, or do you make them stay in college for two or three more years or a couple of years, and hopefully they'll take the right courses that will help enhance them to learn how to manage their money? Because so many guys, as you know, Jacob, they don't learn how to manage their money if you're only there for a year or so.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, I mean, you do. And we've talked about this before. When you do go to the NBA, you're millions of dollars are thrown at you, and a bunch of fame is thrown at you, and a lot of pressure at that. I mean, especially if you're a really good player and you go early on in the draft and you go to a team that really needs a lot of help, a lot of pressure can be put on your shoulders. So it is difficult, and it's a lot to manage for somebody who's 19, 20, 21 years old. But at the same time, you know, I don't know that if you stay an extra 2 or 3 years, are you really going to learn how to manage your money that much better? I mean, it's hard to say, so it's kind of a crapshoot.
It is. It is. We just don't know. That's for sure. Well, I know you heard me say about Evan Smotrich is going to transferring to Maryland. What is your thoughts on Smotrich going to Maryland?
Not really surprised. He had announced right at the end of the season that he was had intentions to transfer. He just didn't know where he was going to go. You know, it makes sense for him. I think that. Maybe it's just the kind of thing where he needs a change of scenery. He's got a lot of potential. He came in as a decently touted recruit, as a really good shooter. And at times this season, he did shoot the ball really well. At the beginning of the Big Ten play, he was a really good shooter. And, you know, at the end of that non-conference schedule early in the Big Ten. But he had a really long drought in the middle of the season, and it wasn't really until the end where he started making shots again. So I don't know how much of that is just, you know, again, we don't know what goes on in the locker room. There might have been, you know, some chemistry problems with the team for him that, you know, had mental effects on him in the way he shot, or it just might have been a system thing. It's hard to say. It was